Salam sejahtera, anda bersama saya Rizal Zulkarpi dan ini Awani Global. Naratif di Jammu Kashmir yang bermula pada tahun 1947 mendapat perhatian sekali lagi pada 5 Ogos 2019 apabila kerajaan India mengaktifkan Artikel 370 dan mengambil alih IOJK dan mengenakan lockdown ke atas kawasan tersebut. Dan fokus dunia ketika ini dan juga seluruh naratif ditumpukan kepada memahami apakah yang berlaku di IOJK ataupun Indian Occupied Jammu Kashmir sejak tahun 1947. Namun pada hari ini kita ingin melihat di sudut dan juga sisi yang berbeza dan juga bagaimanakah komuniti dunia boleh memainkan peranan untuk memastikan bahawa isu Jammu Kashmir ini dapat diselesaikan dengan aman dan juga menerusi diplomasi, melihat kepada kedua-dua kuasa India dan juga Pakistan yang mempunyai kuasa nuklear. Kita ingin bincangkan berkenaan perkara ini bersama dengan Presiden Azad Jammu Kashmir, Sardar Masood Khan, untuk membincangkan bagaimana daripada segi sudut Pakistan dan juga naratif apakah yang ingin dikeluarkan Pakistan berkenaan dengan isu ini. Your Excellency, I was just explaining to the viewers that this crisis started in 1947 and recently it got attention again. It received the global attention again on the 5th of August 2019 after the Indian government activated the Article 370. Maybe we want to hear and we want to see what narratives can the AJK offer when it comes to the issue in Jammu Kashmir with regards to the lockdown that's happening on the Indian side of the Jammu Kashmir.
You know, Azad Kashmir doesn't have to give a narrative. The narrative has been crafted and given by the international community, particularly the international media. World parliaments have spoken up. I mean, like the European Parliament or the British Parliament, US Congress, they have held hearings in the US Congress. So the world knows what is happening in the Indian occupied Jammu and Kashmir. Since August the 5th last year, the entire territory, the occupied territory, is under siege. There are 900,000 troops there. People are being brutalized, they're being killed, tortured, women are being molested. People of all ages have been blinded. Torture is used extensively after illegal detentions. Some 13,000 boys as young as 10 to 12 have been abducted and they have been moved to de-radicalization camps, which are in fact concentration camps, and they're being tortured there. And sexual violence is being used as an instrument of war. So it's a very dire situation and the world knows about it, and despite occupation lockdown and communication blockade that is prevalent there, the world has been able to collect some footage, some evidence, some data which gives us a glimpse of the scorched earth policy that the Indian government is pursuing there. So the situation is very bad. The world is aware of it, and the world has spoken up. India cannot hide its crimes against humanity. What is really worrisome is that the international NGOs have warned that a genocide is taking place in Kashmir. Mm-hmm. And it is at a very advanced stage of various stages of genocide that Kashmir is going through. So we fear that the next step that the Indian occupation forces would take would be of massacre or of genocide or of killings on a wide scale. And then, of course, the Indian occupiers have announced that they would rob Kashmiris of their land. They want to move these Hindus from all over India and settle them in Kashmir, like the Israelis did in Palestine, the occupied territory. So the situation is very, very serious, and we seek international community's intercession, particularly of the United Nations Security Council and the powerful nations of the world, powerful nations sitting in the Security Council and also who have close ties with India, because they should use their influence and clout with India to restrain it. Otherwise, India is using unbridled force in the occupied territory.
My question is on the allegations made by the Indian government saying that state-sponsored terrorism in that particular area, that's why they are locking down the area to ensure that state-sponsored terrorism coming in into the Indian occupied Jammu Kashmir can be contained. What have you got to say when it comes to allegations like that?
There's no terrorism that is being sponsored by Pakistan. And in Azad Kashmir, we are not training any terrorists. We believe in a peaceful and diplomatic solution of the Jammu and Kashmir dispute, and we're striving for that day in and day out. And India fabricates this false narrative and propagates it. Yes, way back in the 1990s, Mujahideen went across the LOC, but that practice has ceased. And it is an indigenous movement inside Kashmir, inside the Indian occupied Jammu and Kashmir. And according to their own figures, the number of militants, whom we do not call militants because they try to protect their or defend their own houses or their homes and their neighborhoods and their women folk and their brothers and sisters. So we do not call them militants, or we call them freedom fighters. I mean, they have the right to defend themselves.
But it's just probably different words, different ways to approach it, do you think?
No, but what I want to say is that there's no terrorism. There are no terrorists being sent across the LOC by Azad Kashmir or Pakistan. So what they're trying to do, that they fabricate this false story and then they weaponize it and instrumentalize it to demonize the people of Jammu and Kashmir and to mislead the world, saying that we're not killing and blinding and massacring people. They say that we are fighting terrorism. There's no terrorism to fight. Mm-hmm. They're beating a dead horse, for God's sake. And the world knows this. You know, after August the 5th, India's lies have been exposed. Mm-hmm. And they were not exposed by the leadership of Azad Kashmir or Pakistan or by the Kashmiris themselves or Kashmiri diaspora. They were exposed by the Western media and the world parliaments. They have their own resources to collate data about India's claims and its allegations. And they have substantiated that no terrorism is taking place right now. There is one form of terrorism, and that is state terrorism, organized terrorism that is being used against the people of Jammu and Kashmir.
You mentioned very grim accusations, and you mentioned evidence, and you're looking for superpowers and countries close to India to take action. What is stopping them from doing this right now?
Two reasons. One is that they have economic ties with India. India is a big country. They have economic and commercial ties. They have investments in India. Indians are also investing in these countries. So the huge economic potential deters them from taking any action. Second is that India has deluded the Western countries into believing that they would act as a barrier. India would act as a barrier against the rise of China. And China is perceived as a hostile nation by the Western countries, particularly the United States. So somehow they have, the Indians have deluded the Indian leadership, I would say, not the whole of India. The Indian leadership has deluded the Western countries into believing that they are their allies, strategic allies, that they would oppose China and that this would be something good for the global order. We believe that this assurance is false. India also has growing ties with China and growing economic ties with China, so it would probably not deliver on its strategic promises made to the Western countries.
But what about diplomacy? Being a career diplomat, do you think these issues, disputes, can be resolved through diplomatic means?
Yes, diplomacy would work. The alternative is war, a devastating war between India and Pakistan. But its devastation would not be confined to the region alone. The entire world would be affected. And, you can't contain an exchange between India and Pakistan just to the conventional level. It can go to the nuclear level. And if it goes to the nuclear level, some 2.5 billion people all around the world would be affected directly or indirectly, and that would be a nuclear Armageddon.
Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the role of soft diplomacy. You've asked the diaspora community in the UK, Europe, North America to reach out to lawmakers, civil society and media to highlight the plight of Kashmiris and human rights violations taking place in the IOJK. Share with us that approach. Is that a novel approach to maybe looking at the Jammu-Kashmir issue?
We have about 10 million Pakistanis and Kashmiris living abroad, all over the world, in North America, in Europe, also in the Asia-Pacific region. And they have influence within their countries, within political circles, within the economic circles, and they can influence decision-making. Mm-hmm. All these members of the diaspora community abroad are worried about the situation in Kashmir, naturally. They have their own allies, they have their own networks, political networks and economic networks. They can mobilize them. In the United Kingdom, for instance, I can tell you that there are about 15 or 16 lawmakers or MPs who are present in the House of Commons. And so you have peers in the House of Lords also. Similarly, Pakistanis and Kashmiris are active in North America. They are also active in the Southeast Asian region. So they can help us internationalize the Jammu and Kashmir dispute, and they can generate pressure which should force India to listen to the voice of the international community. So that's the role of the international diaspora community from mm-hmm. Pakistan and Kashmir. And they are ready to do this endeavor voluntarily.
Mm-hmm. But share with us this celebration, this Kashmir Solidarity Day on the 5th of February. You've been celebrating since the 90s.
Well, there are mainly three forms of protest or awareness raising. Rallies and demonstrations are organized. Conferences and seminars are held to tell the world about the atrocities that are taking place in the Indian occupied Jammu and Kashmir, mm-hmm. and to mobilize international opinion, because India would not listen to the Kashmiris. They are mm-hmm. trapped, they are imprisoned, they are besieged, and they do not have a voice. So we project the voice of the Kashmiris all around the world that on that day. But that's not the only day. There are many other days. Mm-hmm. For instance, on the 26th of January, we observe a Black Day. Similarly, on the 24th of October, when Azad Kashmir was created, that day is celebrated all around the world. On the 27th of October, when India occupied the territory, there is an international campaign to make the world aware of India's continuing occupation, brutalization of the people of Jammu and Kashmir. So these days are symbolic, but they also have a substantive message, mm-hmm. which is broadcast all around the world. But let me tell you that this kind of awareness raising is not just confined to the Kashmiris or Pakistanis living abroad. We now have the support of lawmakers from all over the world. I can tell you that in the European Parliament, you must have read about it, heard about it recently. More than 600 members of European Parliament brought several resolutions to condemn what India was doing in Jammu and Kashmir, mm-hmm. Urged it to cooperate with the United Nations in the implementation of the Security Council resolutions. They also criticized India for what it was doing to its own citizens, to its own minorities, because it has the Bharatiya Janata Party and Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh. These two entities have adopted a very anti-Muslim agenda. So, and the atrocities in Kashmir are part of that agenda. Mm-hmm. You know, they do not like Muslims. They think that Muslims are impure.
But do you think it's down to that? Do you think it's down to religion, Hindu against Muslim, when we talk about the IOJK and these disputes between India and Pakistan?
This is one big element, because they have announced that they want to reduce Muslim majority by the influx of Hindus from India. They do not like that the Jammu and Kashmir state has Muslim majority. So yes, religion is a factor. It cannot be ignored, and this is announced by the leaders of the Bharatiya Janata Party. I mean, this is part of their doctrine that they have to saffronize Kashmir.
Mm-hmm. But from the Pakistan side, from the Azad Jammu Kashmir side, is there an anti-Hindu sentiment?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, Hindus are well integrated into the Pakistani society. There are some memories of the partition. These are bitter memories going back to 1947. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can heal these wounds through confidence building measures. Pakistan has been pursuing such confidence building measures for years, for decades. Mm-hmm. And there was some reciprocity from the Indian side. But now the ascendant powers in India want to change the character, the very character of South Asia. They think that they should have a Akhand Bharat, that they should punish Pakistan for creating the state of Pakistan. They think that all these Muslims who came from Central Asia or western part of South Asia, that they are outsiders, that they are intruders, that you have to make them either Hindus or you have to expel them. Mm-hmm. from this land. So that is fast becoming a factor. It is also becoming a political challenge for those minorities who are living in India. Mm-hmm. Hindutva, this doctrine, is driving this madness, this frenzy for massacre and for marginalization of the people of Jammu and Kashmir in the Indian occupied Jammu and Kashmir. There's no doubt about that.
Let's talk about the economic stability of Azad Kashmir. You mentioned in January saying that you want more business communities and investors to take advantage of the conducive and business-friendly environment and make investments there. And you believe that through investments, through all these companies showing their confidence in Azad Jammu Kashmir, more people will see the real story behind it and also be able to help that region become a bit more stable moving forward. Do you believe this will happen with more investments?
Yes. You know, India has closed off the Indian occupied Jammu and Kashmir. They do not allow tourists, they do not allow foreign visitors, they do not allow representatives of human rights organizations. But we, on the contrary, have opened up Azad Kashmir. We have received delegations from the European Parliament, from the European Union, from the British Parliament, from the US Congress, and we invite people to come to Azad Kashmir and see how calm and stable that part of
Kashmir
is.
How did they respond to all that?
Oh, people are very happy to see that this is a very peaceful place, and we have the highest literacy in the whole of Pakistan. We have some 5 public sector universities. We also have more than 100 postgraduate colleges, thousands of primary schools. So we have a vast network of educational institutions. And as you mentioned earlier, yes, I said that the region, the Azad Kashmir, is ripe for investment from Pakistan, from abroad. And we would welcome investment from Malaysia, for instance, in the sectors of tourism, telecommunications, in the extraction of extraction and in fact polishing of these precious and semi-precious stones. So we know that Malaysia has strengths in these and competencies in these areas. So Azad Kashmir is ready for foreign direct investment. I can also tell you that we are ready to replicate or create many Silicon Valley's there because of the terrain, because of the number of graduates that are coming out of the universities. So in sharp contrast, Indian occupied Jammu and Kashmir, the people are brilliant there. Those young men and women, that young population is brilliant, but they're being brutalized. Mm-hmm. And here in Azad Kashmir, we are giving all opportunities to young men and women.
So you tried to show these visitors, these delegations from Western countries, that this could be what the entire Kashmir region could be if peace was achieved in that particular area.
Absolutely. We tell them that, look, You can go around wherever you like. You can go to the LOC, the line of control, and you can see for yourselves that Kashmiris are free here, that you do not see soldiers roaming in the streets, or you do not have these steel barricades, or you do not have concertina wires there. It's a free land, and you also see that people are happy. They're very participative, and the other thing, there are no enforced disappearances. There's no reign of terror there. So that's what the Kashmir, the whole of Kashmir could be like.
But how did you manage all that? How did Azad Jammu Kashmir achieve all that? Because on the other side of the fence, you see chaos and as you mentioned earlier, human rights violations.
Because the relationship on the other side is one of occupation. The people of Indian occupied Jammu and Kashmir did not want to live with India under any circumstances. The occupation in 1947 of the territory was unnatural and forced, and similarly last year on August the 5th, India once again invaded the territory. And in that context, in fact, I want to thank Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad, who spoke at the United Nations General Assembly on the 27th of September last year, very boldly, very clearly, very in a very forthright manner, in a very authoritative voice. He said that India had invaded and occupied that territory. And he said that the only way to resolve this issue is through the implementation of the United Nations Security Council resolutions. The people of Jammu and Kashmir are beholden to Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad and the entire Malaysian nation.
And how did you feel when he said that at the UN?
We were reassured, and we in fact applauded what he said. We are grateful to him. And he's one great statesman who stood by us, and he didn't mince his words. He said that on behalf of the people of Malaysia, and in fact, you know, he was speaking on behalf of all the freedom-loving people all around the world.
And do you wish more leaders would speak up and also voice their opinions with regards to what's happening in Jammu Kashmir?
Yes, Turkey did. Their president, President Erdogan, did. And Iranian leadership spoke up. There were some other leaders, for instance, I mean, courageous Western leaders like Angela Merkel of Germany, or Swedish leaders, or Finland leaders, they have spoken up. While the rest of the Western world has been very cautious and very careful and calculated in its responses or in its pronouncements on Kashmir. So I think that, yes, in this we treat Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad, we consider him to be an icon, an international icon, who has...
But you need more leaders, right? You need more leaders to speak up.
Yes, he has advocated the rule of law, the supremacy of the rule of law, not of ethnic or religious supremacy. Because this will take us back, for sure, to the kind of world we saw last century, the world of fascism and Nazism, and racial superiority. So here in India, we find that these new leaders, this the Bharatiya Janata Party and Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, they are propagating religious supremacy.
My last question:
India's state terrorism, Indian-sponsored state terrorism targeting the people of the occupied territory.
Let's end on a good note. Let's talk about Pax Kashmiri. Do you think you'll see the day when there is peace in that particular region and peace between India and Pakistan?
Peace is an imperative. The alternative is death and destruction. And we do not want that kind of confrontation between India and Pakistan. What I want to underline is that the people of Jammu and Kashmir want peace, amity, they want realization of their right to self-determination. They do not want to be a nuclear flashpoint between India and Pakistan. They want to be a symbol of cooperation and connectivity. If you resolve the Jammu and Kashmir dispute in accordance with international law, in accordance with the Charter of the United Nations and in accordance with the United Nations Security Council resolutions, which were passed decades ago, you would have a peaceful South Asia. You would have a prosperous South Asia. Let's strive towards that goal. And to achieve that goal, the world will have to put pressure on India to stop its barbaric policies in Kashmir and its oppression of the people of Jammu and Kashmir, who also need to exercise their right to self-determination as other peoples of the world have.
On that note, we thank you very much, Your Excellency.
Thank you so much. It has been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.